Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara Nedarim Daf Nun. We're learning today Le'ili Nishmas Maurice Swergold, Mordechai Tzvi Ben Aaron Tuvia, and we're also learning Le'ili Nishmas Blanche Rubin, Bela Bas Moshe. All the Nishmas we learn for should have an Aliyah from our learning. We pick up on Nun Omid Aleph, three lines at the top of the very, very famous Gemara. We had this Gemara not that long ago, similar Gemara, with some minor changes in Ksubas and Daf Samach Beis Omid Beis. And this is the famous story of Rabbi Akiva and his wife. And we'll list six reasons today as to how Rabbi Akiva became wealthy. The first story, with the story of the famous Akiva with his wife, Rachel, the daughter of Kalba Savua, so that will be the first way they got wealthy, when he's brought back into the family, so to say, and he's given a huge share of Kalba Savua's wealth. Kalba Savua, Gemara tells us over there in Ksubos, was the Ashira Yerushalayim, a very, very wealthy person in Yerushalayim, and he was called Kalba Savua. Rashi over there says, Shekol HaNichnas Lebeso, right, if anybody went into his house when he was hungry, Kekelev, like a hungry dog, Hayotze Soveya, he would leave fully satiated. So he was a big Baal Tztaka, and ultimately he became the father-in-law of Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara begins, three lines in the top, Nunam and Aleph. Rabbi Akiva is Kadishle Birate. Now the Gemara says with the parentheses is De Bar Kalba Savua, but it was with the daughter of Kalba Savua. His name was Kalba Savua. So Rabbi Akiva got halachically married, the first stage of marriage, Kedushin, with the daughter of Kalba Savua. Now, Shama Kalba Savua heard about this and was unhappy. Rabbi Akiva, at that point in his life, was 40 years old. He was an Amo Oretz. He was a person who actually disparaged Tamid HaChamim, although, according to most of the Mefarshim, it was only because they treated him poorly, so in return, he was not happy that they treated him poorly, but not that he did anything, chas v'shalom, to actually hurt or really do something negative against the Talmidei Chachamim, but he was not happy that they treated the Amoratzim the way that they did. In any event, he was a person who had gone through the first 40 years of life without even knowing Aleph Beis, without really becoming at all learned in Halacha. And therefore, Kalba Savua was very unhappy with his shidduch. His daughter could have had the best boy in the entire yeshiva world, and was very unhappy that his daughter married such a, in his opinion, Amo Oretz. So, Adra Hana Mikol Nichse. That's why the story over here is in the Sechthus and the Darm. He made a neder that his daughter could not benefit from any of his properties. In other words, she was written out of his life. She was not able to go and get any benefit from his possessions. Now, that didn't stop the daughter of Kalba Savua. Her name was Rachel. She was able to see in Rabbi Akiva what the final product Rabbi Akiva could be, one of the greatest gedolim in all of Jewish history, and she was able to see that in this unshapen and unformed 40-year-old Amo Oretz. And therefore, she went ahead, Azla Visnasiva Le Besisva, and she went and got married to him in the Choref. The Mefarish over here brings down that Sisva means Biyamos HaChoref, during the winter days. So, after a certain period of time after the Kiddushin, she had the full marriage, the Nisuin. And they lived together, but they lived together in an extremely impoverished condition. So Haviganu Beitivna, they couldn't even afford a mattress. So they slept on a straw bed. Tivna means straw. And as the Mefarish says, Hayushainim, they were sleeping Beina Tevin amidst the straw, shloyulahem karim ksosos, they didn't afford, they couldn't afford mattresses and pillows and covers. Okay, now, have a komenakate, now the Gersa that we have is lei tivna min mezaya, so the Gersa that we have is Rabbi Akiva himself would have to go and remove the straw from his hair in the morning. That's the way the Mefarish learns, so yimakate hatevin misaro, he had to take the straw out of his hair when he would wake up in the morning. That's if you have the Gersa Menachet Lay. Others have the Gersa Havikom Menachet Law, Tivna Ben Mazaya. He would, in the morning, when she would wake up, he would take out the straw from her hair. And he felt very terrible about this. He obviously was the cause of her going from the lap of luxury into this very, very impoverished condition. And Amalei said to her, I wish someday, if I have ever the money, Remina Lech Yerushalayim Dedava, I will go buy you this certain type of jewelry known as Yershal Zahav, Yerushalayim Dedava. The Mefarish brings down over here, he says, Im Yeli Sipuk She'es Asher, if I have the fortune to go and become wealthy, I will make for you Eser Loch Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, a certain type of a diadem, a certain type of headwear that was Bitsuyeris B'chol Yerushalayim, had pictures on his wall aspects of Yerushalayim. And that's the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos tells us here, Yerushalayim shows off, Kidavid Le Rabbi Akiva Ledviso. It talks there about whether you're allowed to wear this on Shabbos. So only wealthy women would wear this on Shabbos. There was no concern that they would take it off and show other people, so it could be worn in the Shusha Rab. The Ran adds, and he says, this was a Takshin Shosov, this was a golden type of a piece of jewelry, Yerushalayim Mitzuyaba, that had pictures of Yerushalayim on it. And the Gemara continues and says, also Elio comes, the Mefarish over here, the Ran, or Tosos, they all say the same idea. We'll read it from the Rosh, Kidei Linachamam Mitzar Chesronim. Elio came to visit them and to comfort them, to show them that they weren't as bad off as there are other people, and that somehow would bring them in a chama. As the Mefarish says, Ovid Hochan Yishum Koras Ruach, he wanted to bring them a little bit of comfort, that Lo Yalo Afilu Tevin Kamolahem, they were wealthy, they at least had straw, he didn't even have straw. And the Ran adds, and he says, Sheesh Aniyim Yoser Mehem, that they should realize that there are people even worse off than them. And this is a very important idea. When it comes to Gashmias, a person should always look at the people that are lower than him. When it comes to Middle Dishmaya, when it comes to Ruchdias, a person should always look at the people above him. So we tend to do it the other way around. We say, oh, I'm better than so-and-so. He never even goes to shul. I go to shul. Okay, I talk in shul. Okay, I do other things. Oh, at least I go to shul. So we tend to look in Mile Dishmaya, in Ruchnias things, we look at the people below us and we're very proud of ourselves. And in Gashmias, we always look at the people above us and say, I wish I had what he had. I wish I had what he had. As opposed to saying, wow, look at that poor person. I am so much better off than him. Anyway, that's why Elio comes. Elio, Idme Lahon Ke. And Osha, he appears to them like a person. They don't realize it's Elio. The Kokori above it, he knocks on the door and he calls out to them and he says, Amalu, Elio says to them, Havuli Purta de Tivna, please can you give me some of your straw? Because my wife gave birth, you're allotted to Itzi, the Leslie Midam Laguna, and I have absolutely nothing for her to lie down on the floor. We don't even have straw, so can you please give me some straw? And Amar lo Rabbi Akiva le'insei. So Rabbi Akiva says to his wife, to Rachel, the daughter of Kalba Savua, who used to be so wealthy, Chazi Gavra, look at this person, Dafilu Tivna, he didn't even straw, lo Isla, he doesn't even have straw. We are so much better off than that person. What a very positive outlook on life to have. Amale, so the daughter of Kalba Savua says to her husband, Rabbi Akiva, Zil Hevi Beirav, go learn. We got married on the condition that you would become a Talmud Chacham. That's very important at the end of the story when the neder is ultimately taken away and Kalba Zavua is allowed to give hanor to his daughter and to Rabbi Akiva. So this is really because even at this point in time, he had agreed that he was going to go and learn in the Beis Medrash and he had the capacity to be a little bit of a Talmud Chacham already, never mind what he would eventually become, the Gadol HaDor. So she tells him, no, go off to the Beis Medrash and learn. So he follows his wife's instructions, always a very good idea. And Azal Tarte Srei Shnin, he went and spent 12 straight years in the Beis Medrash without coming home. Kameh, and he learned in front of the Rabbi Lezer first, and then Rabbi Yeshua afterwards. And ultimately, he learned by both of them. And they're two of his primary Rabbeim that he had to become the Gadol Yisrael. And at the conclusion of the 12 years, he finished the contract, so to say, that he had agreed with his wife, Lemishlam Tartei Srei Shnin, after the 12 years were up, come also Lebesi. So he left the Beis Medrash and was coming home. He was ready, a Gadol Yisrael, wasn't yet the Gadol Ador. So Shama Minahori Beis, as he's coming to his house, he hears his wife having a conversation with a bad person. The Kama Law Chad Rosha Ludvisu, a certain man said, a bad man, said to this woman, to Rachel, his wife, Shapir Ovid Leich Avuch, your father was very smart. He was very appropriate in making the nether that you can't get any anor from him. Why? Because number one, Chada Delo Dome Lech, because this boor of a husband that you have. So as the Ran says, She'eno Dome Loch Mimishpacha Chashuva Kimosech, because he doesn't come from such a chash of a family. So your father was right in making an end of it. You shouldn't have married such a person. He's a bum. And you're a very very chash of a family. And therefore, the Mefarish adds, Shuga Rumimcham, he's much lower level than you. And furthermore, the second reason that he says, that was reason number one. So, Ba'od, reason number two, Shavkoch Armulus, Chayas, you are a living widow, Kulanshin, all these 12 years. Your husband even hasn't come home. The Mefarish says, Shemei Nichoch Bi'almonus Chayas, you're living a living life of a widow over here. Shari Nichoch Kamashon, he's left you for all these years, and you have nothing. he would send some money to support it, the Mepharshim explained. But she was such a tzaddikas, as we'll see later in the story, that's one of the reasons why she deserved to get this Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Mida Keneged Mida, since she sold her hair in order to support herself, to make Sheitloch. So it says that she sold her hair, the Mepharshim bring down, so therefore she was Zolcha to go and be given something beautiful to put in her hair, like the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. In any event, those are the two reasons this Rosh has said that your father was right, Kabbalah Sabu was right in making an eder of Hanoah against you, Rachel, his daughter. No, she's not giving in an inch. Amrele, she says it is Rosh. E tzoyis lidili, if Rabbi Akiva, her husband, were to listen to me, levi tarte srei shnin achrini yosa. Let him go spend another 12 years learning in the Beis Medrash, and I will be very happy to be this, quote, living widow, helping Rabbi Akiva to become the Rabbi Akiva, the Gadol Hador. Now, Rabbi Akiva heard this, Omar, and he said, "Ho will be obviously Rishusa, ehadel liachori. Since she's giving me permission, I am going back to the Beis Medrash and learning another 12 years. Now, most of us ask the obvious question, why don't he at least stop in and say hello? So all the Gedolim say the following idea, I heard this from many of my Rebbeim, there is nothing like uninterrupted learning. When a person learns, and he gets interrupted with his cell phone, so that's for an hour, you get interrupted, you still don't have the same learning as if you didn't have an uninterrupted learning. And imagine somebody learning a Beis Medrash. So the difference between two 12-year periods of learning, as unbelievably great as 12 years of learning is not the same as 124 concentrated, uninterrupted period of learning. And that's what the Gemara is trying to teach us over here, that when you're sitting and learning, you should make sure that there are no interruptions, because any interruptions take away from the learning. It was only a second, it was only a minute, we only stopped for this, we only stopped for that. So that's going to deteriorate the learning and not make it as powerful as it could have been. And that's the message. Now, I'm sure, and we know that they communicated with each other, because he sent her money. He was a wood chopper, and he sent her the little bit of money that he had to try to help support her. So the Gemara clearly is not telling us that he could do this without his wife's permission, number one. And number two, she was aware that she didn't say, well, where is he? He didn't come home. So she knew that he was learning in the Beis Medrash still, but she was very, very happy. And therefore, Hadar Ozel, he went back to the Beis Medrash and Hava Tarte Srei Shnei Achriniyosa, and he learned there for another 12 years. Now, he's become the Gadol Hador. 24 years of straight learning, that makes you into the Gadol Hador. And he became the great, great Rabbi Akiva. So also, now here the gears that we have is Be'esrin V'arboa Alfin Zuge Tamideh, that he came back with 24,000 pairs of Tamidei Chachamim, which would mean that he had 48,000. But that's not the gears that we have in the Gemara and Ksubos. And the way the story has come down is that the gears in Ksubos is more correct. And the Mesor Seshas Osmei says, B'Ksubos Lesa. It doesn't say 24,000 pairs. It says in Ksubas 12,000 pairs of Talmidei Chachamim, meaning that this should have been over here without the word Zuge, that he had 24,000 Talmidim. Okay. Norfolk Kule Almo Liape. And of course, the Gadol Hador comes to town, so the entire town goes out to greet him. The whole shtot, the whole area comes out to greet Rabbi Akiva coming back to his hometown. V'av, he and his wife too, Rachel, Komas Lemefak Liape. So she goes out to greet her husband. She doesn't wait for him to come home. She goes out to greet her husband, to be with the rest of Klai Yisrael, greeting the Gadol Hador. So Amar Lo, how Rishia, that Mestama, same person, the bad person, the horrible person, who told her, your husband's leaving you as a living widow, and he's not roy to be your husband. So he says to her, V'at Lecha, where are you going? Now, in this, the way Agamar has it, is a very disparaging type of a statement that he's making to her, that how are you going to go out to him? You don't have anything proper to go visit the Gadol Hador. Others explain this, the Gemara elsewhere explains this, that it wasn't necessarily this Russia, but it was her neighbors who were saying, you can't go out without having appropriate garments to wear. So in any event, Ormalei, she says back to this Russia, in our gears over here with the Gemara, don't worry about it. I could go out to greet him with ripped clothing. I could go out to greet him without very fancy clothing. Yodeya tzaddik nefesh behemto. The tzaddik knows his wife. In other words, the Pasuk in Mishlei tells us over here that the husband knows exactly what his wife has been doing and how she has supported him for all these years, both emotionally, financially, and has allowed him to learn for 24 straight years. He's not going to forget who I am. Right? This isn't something that I have to worry about because I'm wearing torn clothing that he's going to ignore me. So also so she goes out to greet him along with everybody else. But the Rabbanan, his Tamidim, who are his escort, they don't let her get near. She doesn't look like a very distinguished person, and they have no idea that this is his wife. So they, so to say, push her aside and don't let her get to Rabbi Akiva. But Rabbi Akiva sees what's going on, and Omer lo, tells the Tamidim, leave her alone. Hanichu lo. You better let her come up over here, because everything that I have, Shali, and everything that you have, Vishalochem, is all Shalahu. One of the most famous statements in all of Shas, Shali, Vishalochem, Shalahu. A husband's success is all due to his wife. And Rabbi Akiva is telling them that the only reason I'm Rabbi Akiva, and the only reason you're my Talmidim, is because of this tzedekes, this unbelievably great woman, Rachel, Bas Kalba Savua, and you obviously let her come through. Shama Kalba Savua. Now, Kalba Savua also hints that the tzaddik had come to town. And he didn't know that this was Rabbi Akiva, but he felt terrible about the neder that he had made over 24 years ago to his wife, and he has charata on it, and he wants to be matir neder. So he goes to Rabbi Akiva in the hopes of him finding a Pesach, maybe the charata or maybe another Pesach, to go and be matir the neder. So also the itchil al nidre. So he goes to ask Rabbi Akiva. Others say it wasn't Rabbi Akiva that he asked. He has to ask a beis din because he couldn't go ask Rabbi Akiva to be matir the neder, because Rabbi Akiva knew who Kalba Savua was and knew what the neder was about and would be a nogeh bedavar and wouldn't be allowed to go and be matir the neder. In any event, so basically the Gemara elsewhere tells us that they had a conversation, and he asked Kalba Savua, if you had known that your son would be a Talmud Chacham, would you have still, your son-in-law, would have been a Talmud Chacham, would you still have made such a neder against your daughter to get Hanor for you? And he says, of course not. Not only if he had been a Talmud Chacham, if I knew that he wouldn't be an Amma Aretz, if he just learned even one halacha, I would have been happy. I thought he was a total Amma Aretz. Now, I mentioned before, early in the Shia, so Rabbi Akiva, even at that point in time, was guaranteed that he would learn at least one halacha, even if he hadn't started Beis Medrash, he still would have been guaranteed to learn halacha. So this is not nolat. Some suggest that this is a problem with nolat. And the Ran can be found over here on Nun Omud Beis, where he discusses this a little bit more in detail. But I'll say this outside. So bottom line is that Rabbi Akiva and or the other Talmidei Chachamim were able to use this as a Pesach. Others say, no, it was just pure charata. And the fact that he regretted so much, so that was allowing them to be matir neder. And anyway, the gersa that we have is the Ishtarei, the Ishtari. So they were matir the neder, and he was freed from this neder. Others just leave out one of the words, the Ishtarei, and just have, and the neder was Hutar, and now he was able to give a tremendous wealth back to his daughter and to his son-in-law, Rabbi Akiva. And this, as we'll see, is the first way that Rabbi Akiva became extremely wealthy. Now, it's interesting. Rabbi Akiva is famous for saying, Ezu Asher, who is considered a person who is a very, very wealthy person. It's one who says that his wife is a very pleasant woman, that she does very nice chesed. And there is probably no better example of a wife doing chesed than Rachel, Bas Kalba Savua, who gave up everything and supported Rabbi Akiva for 24 years of learning. And Rabbi Akiva was zocher to have such a great wife. And as I pointed out before, she was zocher to then become the wife of the Gadol Hador, and to get this Irshel Zahav, again, Mido Keneged Mido, that she supported him. She even sold her hair in order to go make sheitloch, so that's why she was zocher to get this beautiful Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. That was, of course, just a small example of all the zuchus that she had. The real zuchus would be in the Olam Emes. So in any event, that's what the Yerushalmi brings down for the Gemara in Shabbos, this story that there was one other Tana's wife. The Gemara there says it was Rabban Gamliel's wife who said that she also wanted to get an Yerushal Zahav, and Rabban Gamliel told her that only somebody who does things like Rachel, Bas Kalba Savua, would be zochet to go and have such a diadem on her head because she did such great chesed to her husband. Okay, so that was the first of the six reasons why Rabbi Akiva became very, very wealthy. Vaitu in the Gemara, min shis mile, from six things, i'at Rabbi Akiva, and number one was min Kalba Savua. This was the story that we just said. He became very, very wealthy now as the son-in-law of one of the wealthiest people in Yerushalayim. Okay, that's reason number one. Reason number two, min ayolo disvinto. An ayol is a certain type of a deer. So it's known as a hart. So this ayol was something that they used to make a wooden image of an ayol, and they would put it on their boats, and They would store all of their wealth in this isle. Now, what happened over here? So the Gemara continues and tells us, they call Svinta, every boat, Ovdenle min Eina. They would go and put something. Now, Eina, according to some, means this isle, this type of a heart. Others explain that it was a wooden structure. The Ryan says, Demus isle may eats. They made this isle, this heart, out of wood. Lenachesh, this was used for divination, ulasimin, and as a sign, shetehasvino kalo balilchosa ka'ayil, that the boat should be able to travel lightly and swiftly like this heart. Voyumimalin also din rezov, and to help with this idea, they would put lots of gold inside this heart. In any event, this was obviously something that was removable, and what happened was, zimnocha, the one time, and shuyah al keith yama. The soldiers were very, very busy. The Mefarshim tell us they were very, very busy doing other things. And as a result, they put this isle down and they left it by accident on the shore and they sailed off without it. And also, who? Rabbi Akiva comes and Ashka, and he found it. Now, the Medrash tells us that Rabbi Akiva went to return it to them. How could he keep this? It was obviously something that had simonim on it, and he knew it came from a boat, and he went and told the sailors, hey, I have your isle. I want to give it back to you. He knew that it was filled with money. And they were so amazed at the tzidkus of such a person that he would return such a fantastically wealthy thing that they actually were so impressed with him that they said, no, you keep it because you'll use the money properly, and they gave it to him. So it wasn't a question of him not doing Hashavas Aveda. He did Hashavas Aveda, and in fact, they allowed him to keep it. So that's reason number two, that Rabbi Akiva became very wealthy. Reason number three is Umin Gavza. This Gavza, the Ran tells us, is Teva Ha'asuya Le'atznia B'socha Mamon Hasvina. This is another type of a treasure chest that they would put the wealth of the boats into. And this Gaza, again, the story was, the Zimna Chada Yoev Arba Zuze L'Sapunoi. The Rabbi Akiva gave four zuz to these sailors to go and buy something for him. Amalu, he said to them, Aiti li bidam, go and buy me something with this money. Nope, below Ashkelon, they couldn't find anything of real value. Ella Gavza, they once found this wooden structure. Now, the Ben Yehuda says that it was some sort of a chair, and it was made to be very, very heavy because it had metal on it, so people wouldn't realize that it really, the metal was very light. They would think the metal was what gave its weight and not all the gold that they would hide inside this chair. So, Gavza, they found this Gavza, okay, Yama, also on the seashore, and it had been left there, or a boat had actually crashed over there, and this was the source of all their money inside this gavza, this chair, or this chest. So, Asiule, and the sailors, these Sapunai, who were instructed to go buy something for Rabbi Akiva with the four zuz that he gave them, brought it to him. And Amrule, they said to him, Avid Marona Ale. No, you can use this chair, you can have this, and that would be worth the four zuz that you gave us to buy you something. He takes it, and he sees that it's heavy, and he opens it up. Ishtakach dahava mole dinre. And he saw that it was open with a tremendous amount of money inside of it. And that is reason number three, why he became wealthy. But the Gemara just continues and says, why was it filled with so much gold? Because the Zimnocha, the one time, Tovas Svinasa, and the Bach adds the words over here, Demin Disrukisa, which we have later on, a line later, which the Hagos Tzirim and the Mesos HaShase doesn't belong over here. In any event, the words Demin Disrukisa, which means it came from a certain group of people that were involved in merchandising, these owners of this chest or chair. So one time it was that their boat sank. The Kule Iska and all of the profits that they had made from their business dealings, they had placed inside this treasure chest. Havamachis Bahu Gavza. They put it inside this chest or chair. Vishtakach Bahu Zimna. And he found it and was able to go and keep it. Now, in this situation, the sailors had all drowned the stomach. They weren't around. There was nobody here to go and return it to. So it was Hefker, and he was able to go and keep it. Reason number four that Rabbi Akiva became so wealthy was Umin Matrunisa. Now, the Gemara doesn't give us the discussion over here, but you can see this in the Ran and the Mefarish. I read it from the Mefarish. He gives a little bit more details. And you see this in Dibur Maaseh Umin Matrunisa, Shepam Achas, one time, Hutzuchu Chachamim Mamon Harbi Lebeis HaMedrash. One time, there was a tremendous need in the Beis HaMedrash. One of the jobs those days and nowadays is that the Rosh Yeshiva has to raise money for the yeshiva, and the yeshiva desperate for money. So what happened? V'shigu was Rabbi Akiva Eitzel Matronisa Achas V'lova Mimena Mamun Godo. So Rabbi Akiva went to fundraise, and he went to this certain Matronisa, a matron, a great woman who was very wealthy, and he borrowed from her a huge sum of money. Now, when she gave it to him, Armelo, she said to him, "What's the big collateral? Mi ye li ore shetipara li luzman kavua. Who is going to guarantee this loan that at a certain time, X number of months, years from this date, that you'll pay me back this huge sum of money?" So Armelo, so Rekiva tells her, "Mi shetirza. Who would you like to be the guarantor of the loan?" So Armelo, she tells Rekiva, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu vayam. Let it be to absolutely guaranteed that they'll be here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Yam, they'll pay back the loan in a year, 2 years, whatever it was. When you don't come back with the money, they will be the guarantors." Shoyso Besal Sasa Yam. And she lived by the seaside, so therefore she said the Yam. So Amalo Rabbi Akiva, Kenya. So Rabbi Akiva says, a deal. So Rabbi Akiva, so to say, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Yam will guarantee this loan. Nu, Kishigi Azman, when it was time to pay back the loan, of course Rabbi Akiva was going to pay back the loan, as we'll see in a moment that he did. But Chol Rabbi Akiva, Velo Yochel Lahavi HaMamot. But he got sick, he's in the ICU, he's not able to go and physically bring her the money. Nu, the date is due, so Rabbi Akiva's not there, she has zero concerns. She goes out to the Yam, she goes out to the seashore, and she says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yotza Osa Matrinus Asasa Yam V'Omra. She says, "We go to Shalom." She's a God-fearing, wonderful Erlicha woman. Galui v'yadua lefonecha ki lecha v'layam hazeh hamanti mo'osi. She says, "HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I only lent this money because Rabbi Akiva says you're guaranteeing it. So therefore, pay me back." So immediately, Hichlis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ruach shtus belibo shel bas Kesar. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the Kesar's daughter, the daughter of the Caesar, go crazy. And what happens? The Nichnasa lebeis ginozov. She goes into his storehouse, his chamber, with all, he keeps all his wealth. The Notla Kartalis, she goes out and takes a basket or some sort of a chest with very precious diamonds in it. The Zarkalayam, and she throws it into the ocean. The Shlicha Hayam, the Pesach Besa, Shalosa Machanisa, and the sea carries this diamond filled, jewel filled chest and brings it right to the steps of the Machanisa, right to the shore where the Machanisa is. They're not lost, and she picks it up. No, she says, "I'm paid back. Thank you very much, HaKadosh Baruch Hu." No, Rabbi Akiva gets better. The Achazman, Hevi lo Rabbi Akiva, HaMamon. As soon as he gets out of the ICU, as soon as Rabbi Akiva gets better, he immediately comes to her with all the money that he owes her. The Amar lo, he says, Ayichalech shlo evesi lo HaMamon bizman shekavu shecholisi. He says, "Please, please, please forgive me. Don't be upset at me. I was sick, but I wanted to come." And now, Baruch Hashem, a day later, a week later, whatever it was, he comes with all the money that he owed her. And he says, "Please forgive me for coming late." So she says, "You didn't come late. HaKadosh Baruch Hu paid you back already." Armelo, "Yeah, kol shalach. This is all your money now. Shemamoni bal yodi bizmano. The money that you owed me was paid back by your guarantors." V'sipralo kol ha'maisa. She tells him the whole story. V'nosna lo matanos gedolos upatrosu l'shalom. And she gave him additional matanos, and she sent them off in good peace. Now, other mefarshim bring down over here that this jewelry box was actually worth more, with the diamonds and gold inside of it, was actually worth more than the loan. So she actually got paid back more. So let's say she was owed $100,000, she got $200,000. So she gave Rabbi Akiva the extra $100,000. She said, "I'm not entitled to that. That wasn't mine, that's yours." So in addition to the money that he didn't have to pay her back, he returned that to the people that he borrowed it from to go pay her back, but he was given this extra $100,000, Kaviyocho, and he became rich from that. That's reason number four. Now we turn to Nun Amud Beis, and we get to reason number five, Umin Ishto Shatonas Rufus. Now again, here a fascinating story, and we'll see this inside in the Ran. The top Ran, Umin Ishto Shatonas Rufus. Shai Rabbi Akiva Mikapcho Bikari. So Rabbi Akiva went and constantly would go and defeat this Tarnas Rufus. According to the Ben Yoyada, this wasn't the same person. The Tarnas Rufus is going to kill Rabbi Akiva Nebuch at the end of Rabbi Akiva's life, because obviously, as we'll see from this story, he's going to marry this Rosh's wife when she's Biskayeris, so obviously he had to die. So Tarnas Rufus, the Ben Yoyada says, is a name like Paro, it's a name like President, it's a name like King, it's a generic name. So Tarnas Rufus wasn't a specific person. But in any event, the one who was the leader of the Romans at this point in time, this Tarnas Rufus, would debate with Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva would go and embarrass him, and publicly embarrass him in these debates, because he was able to go and prove him wrong. Pamachas bo lebeso sar vizav. One time he comes home very, very upset and angry, and Amar lo ishto, his wife tells him, "Mipnei ma panecha zoafim? Why are you so sad? Why are you so upset?" So Amar lo, "Mipnei Rabbi Akiva shemekanter osi b'chol yom b'dvarim," because Rabbi Akiva defeated me again in the debate. He's constantly embarrassing me. So Amar lo, so she tells him, "Elokeyem shel elu sone zimahu." Their God hates immorality. Tainly Rishus, give me permission. And again, it shows you how far people are willing to go to do anti-Semitism. This guy is willing to give up his wife. He doesn't know that Rabbi Akiva is not going to succumb. His wife says, let me seduce him and I'll sleep with Rabbi Akiva. And he says, yes. So, unbelievable. So, Tainly Rishus, she says to him, and I will go and seduce him and cause him to sin. And this way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will get very angry at him. The Mefarish says over here that she didn't try to just to seduce him. She basically showed off her thigh to him. Begilso shoka. So in any event, she goes and tries to seduce Rabbi Akiva. And her husband gives her permission. So her husband says, okay, it's worth it to me. Miniskashto, she gets all beautiful. And v'hol chalo eats Rabbi Akiva. And she goes to Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva sees her, he does three things, strange things. Rock, he spits, Sochach, he laughs, Uboch, and he cries. So she obviously wants to know what's going on. So Amar lo, she says to him, Ma inun hanoch plos mila. Why did you do these three things? You spit, you laughed, you cried. So Amar lo, he says to her, Shnayim eforish, shlishi lo eforish. I'll tell you two of the three, but not the third one. Rokakti, the reason I spit was, Al shebos mitipos rucha. You're such a beautiful lady, and you think you're such a beautiful thing, but you come from a smelly drop. In other words, you come from a zera, you come from semen, you come from an egg, and that's not something to be so proud of and so beautiful that it's you. No, you come from a smelly drop. So he spit and says, look, you're a nothing. But he cried, Bachisi, Alai Shufra, the Bali Biara. He cried because she was an unbelievably beautiful woman. He says, it's a shame that your beauty is going to eventually be buried in the ground. And who saw Chach, and he laughed, and he didn't tell her why, because he saw through Ruach HaKodesh, that she was trying to seduce him now, and he passed that test, and he would be eventually rewarded. Mistama, his wife Rachel dies, and after this Tornas Rufus dies, so she's Miskayeres, and she comes to marry Rabbi Akiva. She sees what a tzaddik he was. She saw that he didn't get seduced by her. Everybody else would be seduced by her. And she saw that this is emes. This is the beauty of a relationship, that it's not purely based upon physicality. And she ultimately is Miskayeres. And Rabbi Akiva saw through Ruach HaKodesh that he would be able to marry her then. Linasi lo. The lower Soladia. But this he didn't want to tell her. Because, A, if she knew that that was the reason why she should be Miskayeres, so ultimately that would make it that the Geiris wasn't done Lishma, and maybe that would ruin it. In any event, that's the Maisa. So, Amar lo, klum yesh tshuva. So, she realizes the greatness of Rabbi Akiva. She says, there's a way for me to do tshuva. So, Amar lo, yeah, hey, you do tshuva. So, she did it. Holchovin is gaira. Ultimately, her husband dies, and before she explained, she does tshuva, she's miskayeres, and she eventually does go. Venisis lola Rabbi Akiva. And she was very wealthy. There's the widow of the Caesar, the Turnus Ruthless, this leader, the chnisalo mamun harbe. She brings him much money. Okay, so this is the famous story of Turnus Rufus, the wife of Turnus Rufus, Ishto shel Turnus Rufus. Then finally, the sixth and final reason is Umin Kitia Bar Shalom. And everybody on the daf over here doesn't bring this story down, but they say, this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, daf Yud, go look over there. So what does the Gemara there say? So it's a famous story that this great person, Kitia Bar Shalom, he was a guy, he was a senator, and there once was a very, very bad Caesar. All the Caesars other than Antoninus were terrible to the Jewish people. And this Caesar was a Rasha, and he asked the question. The Gemara of Azar goes through the story that the king said, if a person has a gangrenous foot, so what should he do with it? Should he cut it off and therefore survive, or be it he'll be without that foot, or should he leave it there? He'll have a foot, but it's going to cause ultimately sepsis and all sorts of infection on the rest of his body and ultimately bring down the person. So he asked this to all the people, and all of a sudden they said, yeah, cut it off. In other words, this was an analogy to the Jewish people. They're like a festering wound in their eyes, so go cut off the Jews. So Kitia Bar Shalom, who was one of the senators, so he said to the king, no, that's a bad idea. If you cut this off, so people first of all say that you are killing your own citizens. And furthermore, you'll never be successful because they're all over the place. And you will never be able to go totally eradicate the Jewish people. So the Caesar said, you know, Taka, you're right, except there's a problem. If you defeat the king in a debate, you die. So they took him out to kill him. And as he's going out to be killed, a certain woman says to him that it's a shame that you're being killed, Al-Kiddush Hashem, but you're not dying as a Jew. You should convert quickly and become Jewish. And this way, you're dying as a Yid Al-Kiddush Hashem rather than as a Goy Al-Kiddush Hashem. Again, tremendous act of selflessness that this Ketiyah Bar Shalom did to save the Jewish people. So he goes and does a bris milah on himself. He bites off his arla, the Gemara tells us, and this way he dies as a Yid, and before he dies, before they kill him, he says, I want all my money. He was a senator. He must have been very, very wealthy. He says, I want all my money to go to Rabbi Akiva. And that is the sixth and final reason how Rabbi Akiva became so wealthy. Ketiyah Bar Shalom. Zohar Latov. Now, the Mefarshim explain, what in the world do we need to know that Rabbi Akiva is very wealthy? And some of the Mefarshim bring down, Marsha and others bring down, to teach us this idea that Rabbi Akiva didn't become wealthy because he took money from the Talmidim. No, he taught them for free, Mistama, as the ideal way that we learned previously. Ideally, you should only take Schar Batola, the money that you could have made doing something else, so that you take, but you don't charge the Torah, just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu for free, so Moshe Rabbeinu has to teach us for free. In any event, so the Marsha explains that the Gemara is trying to teach us over here, don't think that Rabbi Akiva became wealthy because he had 24,000 Talmidim. He became wealthy from these six reasons. Fascinating story, first part of the Shia today. And now we go on to additional stories. Today's a great day for telling stories in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, Rav Gamda, Yov Arba Zuzi L'Sapunoi, similar to Rabbi Akiva, Rav Gamda once gave these sailors, these four Zuz, to go and purchase something for him, Lasu Yibahom Midam, to buy something for him, Velawashko, they couldn't find anything good, except Asule Bahon Kupa. They brought back a monkey. Kupa is a monkey. And what did this monkey do? Ishtamin. He jumps away. He didn't want to stay the pet of Rav Gamda, and knew all Luchor, so he goes into some sort of a hole, he digs the hole, he goes into a hole, and Chafru Basre, they go and try to capture him, go get him back, and they go into this hole, they dig further into this hole, and Ashkechua, they find the monkey, the Revia, that is sitting al Margulyosa, sitting on a whole bunch of pearls, and Aisinu Le Kulon, and they bring him all through Rav Gamda. Now, how come Rav Gamda got it? So these sailors who went there, they saw that it was really Rav Gamda who was in his zechus that they got it, so they gave it to him. Others explained they gave him half of it, and they were going to keep half, but then they decided to give him the entire amount. But anyway, Rav Gamda also became very wealthy from this episode. Mark continues and says, Amale Bas Kesar, Rabbi Shimon ben Chananya. So we were talking about Bas Kesar before. We had one of the stories was that the daughter of the Kesar went crazy for a period of time and threw some of the gold into the ocean. That's how the Matronisa was able to be paid back. So we have another story about a Kesar over here, Bas Kesar. So one time the daughter of the Caesar said to Rabbi Shimon ben Chananya, who was the Gadol Hador, this is the Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi, Rabbi Shua, and Rabbi Elazar. This is Rabbi Shua ben Chananya. And the Gemara elsewhere in Sota tells us that he was the best debater. He was the best thing for the Jewish people in the Roman court. So she saw how brilliant he was. She saw how much Torah he had learned, but he also was not a very beautiful-looking person. Since he spent so much time in the Beis Medrash, the Gemara also describes him as being like the black pot. He was a very dark complexion. He wasn't ruddy. He wasn't healthy-looking. And as we'll see, they describe him in other terms here in the Gemara. He wasn't what we would call a very handsome person. So Amalei Bas Kesel, Rishu Mechananya. So the daughter of the Caesar says to Rishu Mechananya, Mefo'ora, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu put such beauty, the Torah, Bechli Mechor, in such a ugly type of a container? So why are you not a handsome person? I would have thought that God would make the biggest Talmud Chacham to be the handsome guy, right? The hero in all of the movies is always a handsome guy. He's never an ugly guy. So Amalei, so he says back to her, Limdi mi beis avuch, I learned this from what you do in your house. Bamem menichin yayin, in your house, what do they put wine in? How do you store wine? So Amalei, she says, we put it b'mani depak, we put it in klicheres, we put it in earthenware containers, that's good for the wine. So he says, oh, you're so rich and wealthy. Should you do the same thing as the poor people? The poor people put it in earthenware containers. You should put it in gold containers. All the poor people, the regular people, they put it in earthenware containers. No, Asun, you guys, you're so wealthy, but money the pakwa. You should put it into an earthenware container. You should put it in, you should place your wine, but money the kaspa vidaba. You should put your wine into kaspa silver and daba's gold containers. Why do you put it into such meager earthenware utensil. She says, Taki, you're right. Ozlo, she goes, Virhamas Chamra, she takes their wine and puts it bimane de kaspa into these silver containers, vidavin, these golden containers. No, what happens? Obviously, everybody knows you put stuff in an earthenware barrel, it maintains and even improves the wine. Here, putting in the gold and silver, it got a metallic taste to it, and Vasari, and it ruined it. It wasn't preserved. So he said to her, Amalua, Rishu ben Chanani says to this Bas Kesar, Af Oraisa Kain. This is the way of the Torah as well, that if a person isn't always concerned about his appearance, if a person isn't always concerned about, oh, how do I look, how is this going to appear, so then he'll be just interested in learning Torah, he won't be bothered by these extraneous, unimportant things, and he'll be much better Talmud Chacham. Aye, she tells him, in a good kasha, v'ikah shapirin u'gmirin, there are those that are big talmid chacham and gmirin, but they're shapirin, they're handsome. What, is this not an absolute? Every ugly person is a talmid chacham, every handsome person is not. That's not true. Sometimes a talmid chacham can also be handsome. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make you, bedavka, so not handsome? So Amar Lo, he says to her, ihabu sinu, if these talmid chachamim didn't think about their beauty, if they hated their beauty, if they didn't give it any attention, so then, havu gemirin tzei, there would even be bigger talmid chacham. And he says, even the great talmid chacham, so they could be possibly, their greatness could be somewhat lessened because they are somewhat concerned about their looks and concerned about external, superficial things. And he says it would be better off for them if they were ugly. This way, they wouldn't be concerned about it, and they would become, in fact, even greater talmid chacham. One continues with another story. Hai, the asyo lechamed, Rav Yehuda, min ardoi ledina, there once was a certain woman who came in front of Rav Yehuda, who lived in Nardoi, for Din Torah, the Ischayavis Min Dina. And ultimately, the litigants were there, he paskined against this woman. She was very upset. Armalei, she says to him, Shmuel Rabbah, Chochi Dan, would your Rabbi Shmuel have judged in the same way? He would have come to a different conclusion. So he tells her, oh, you knew my Rabbi? Armalei, Yadatale, you knew Shmuel? And she says, of course. Armalei, yeah, I knew that man. He was Gutsa. That means he was very, very short. The Rabbah Krese, and he was very, very wide in the stomach. In other words, he was obese. Ukam, in addition, he was black. Ukma is shoe polish. That's a term that we use for a black polish. So Ukam, he's a very dark person. The Rabbah Shine, as we just pointed out, the Ukam, we said that sometimes the Talmid Chachamim, they didn't have a ruddy complexion. They weren't outside getting sun, and they weren't eating well. They weren't taking care of themselves. So they became of a darker, sallow type of nature in their skin. The Rabbah Shine, and he had very big teeth that allowed him to eat so much. In other words, she unbelievably disparaged Shmuel by giving this description. So Rabbi Yehuda is very upset at this. Amalah, Levazuye, Kosis, is that why you came to the Din Torah now? To make fun of my Rabbi Shmuel? Tehevei Hai Itza Bishamta. And he put it into Cheir, he put it into Shamta until she did tshuva. Now, she didn't do tshuva, and therefore Paka Umesa. She stayed like this. She wasn't upset that she had disparaged and had denigrated the great Gadol Shmuel, and therefore ultimately her stomach split open and she died. Mark continues by quoting the mission now. And it said, Umutar bebeitza turmita, that when a person made a neder against a certain type of food, so that also included beitza turmita. What is beitza turmita? The Gemara asks, my beitza turmita? So Amar Shmuel said, Avda, an eved, a slave, the Ovid law that knows how to cook this beitza turmita properly, shave alfa dinre, is worth very much. It's worth 1,000 dinarim. Such an eved is a very well-skilled, well-trained eved. You should pay 1,000 zuzim to go get such an eved. What do you have to do to make this beitza turmita? Now, Shmuel is the one who said this. Shmuel's a doctor. Shmuel is somebody who's going to use this beitza turmita as a diagnostic test. This would be the equivalent of today doing a pill colonoscopy that we'll see that they would eat this egg and it would then be excreted whole from the body. After you see what they did to it, you can understand why it wasn't able to be digested. And it would, if there was a lesion in the colon, so the doctors would be able to look at this egg and see the disease that was present on it and know how to treat a person. So let's see the side of the Gemara. So what would they do with this beitza turmita? Umayilo alfa zimne b'maya chamime. They would go and boil it 1,000 times in hot water. Lav davka 1,000, it's a guzma. Certain numbers are always a guzma. So 1,000 times is saying that they did it a lot. Alfa zimne b'maya kriri. And then afterwards they would go and cook it or soak it in cold water 1,000 times until admis zutra, until it became very, very small, and now kihechi de bola yosa, and they were able to go and swallow it whole, and it wouldn't be digested because it was so well cooked, it wouldn't break apart inside the stomach. Now, it would be a test to see if there's any colonic disease. Bim is keva, if there was a wound or some sort of an illness inside the intestines, sorry chala, it would attach itself to this egg, and the chad navka, when this egg would come out intact from the other end of the person, the asya, and they would be able to go and take it, yoda asya, a doctor would know, my sama mizboile, he would see the illness that was present on this egg, he would be able to tell, they would do a histological analysis of it, they would go and examine this egg, and they would know what treatment, my sama, what potion, what medication would be helpful for this person, over my mitzvah, and how they would be able to go and heal him. Now, Shmuel himself was a doctor. Shmuel have a bodik nafsho b'kulcha. Now, kulcha, the Ran says, we don't know what it is. However, the Rosh and others say that this kulcha was hainu beitzas termita. That's exactly, kulcha is beitzas termita. Whereas the Aruch, and you can see this in Oz Beis and Sosa Shas, says this was a stalk, a kelach, that was from a kruv, from a cabbage. In any event, whatever this kulcha was, either it was the beitzas termita or it was something else, Shmuel would go and use this to do a diagnostic colonoscopy, kaviyochol, on himself. And he did this ad de mis trin inshe beise ale sarean. And inshe beise could be understood. Some understand this over here as his wife. Others understand this as the anoshim, the people of his household. Inshe could mean a wife or could mean the people of his household. In any event, they saw how sick Shmuel was and they thought he was going to die. And they pulled out their hair because they were so sad that their great Shmuel looked like he was in such pain and was going to die. Matik Mori says, we learned in the Mishnah in Maestros, Tanan Hosam, Hayose Bich Lufsin. That's the proper gears over here. We had learned these klufsin. We said it was a certain type of te'ena, a certain type of fig. So if a person makes working, he's in the fields of klufsin, so lo yochal b'vno sheva. He's not allowed to go take a different type of fig known as the b'vno sheva. When you're working, a worker is allowed to go and eat. He's picking apples, he's allowed to eat the apples. But he can't go over to the other trees that have oranges on them and go eat the oranges. If he's working with the apples, he's only allowed to eat the apples. If he's working the oranges, he's only allowed to eat the oranges. So the person who's working on this field that has these types of te'enim known as b'chlufsin, so if he's working over here with this type of teina, lo yochal b'vno sheva. He can't eat the type of teina known as b'vno sheva. If you remember, I said previously, the b'vno sheva are the figs, the te'enim, they're called b'vno sheva because they brought shiva into the world. According to one interpretation, that the Eitz Hadas that Adam and Chava ate from was a fig tree, so this caused death into the world, and it caused shiva to occur in the world, and that's why they're known as b'vno sheva. In any event, if a person is working on these b'no sheva, lo yochal b'chlufsin. He's not allowed to eat these other types of figs. They're two separate species, and you can't eat one or the other, even though you have a right to eat one, you don't have the right to eat the other. Nu, what are these klufsin? My klufsin, what are they? So, mina de'ainim. As I just said, they're a certain type of te'inim, the of the minon lafte. And they're used over here to make lafte. So the Mefarish says, lafte is mine meichel, a certain type of a dish. And that's what the Rosh says as well. In any event, Mori now tells us a story about one person who wanted to see how many different dishes you can make with this latte. So, how gavra the yod Abdul Chavri, he gave his servant over to his friend to teach him, Leagmure, to teach him alfa mini latte, how to make 1,000 different dishes with this latte, these certain types of te'enim. No, the guy only could teach him 800. Agmure tamne mea, he only taught him 800. So, Asmine Ladina, come in the Rebbe. So, he went to Rebbe and said, hey, I paid him for 1,000, he only taught me 800. Rebbe shocked, Omar Rebbe. Rebbe says, Avosenu, Amru, Nashinu, Tova, our predecessors, they said, Avosenu, they said that we have no idea what Nashinu, we forgot what goodness is, and Anu, us, their descendants, Afilu Be'enenu Lorinu, we've never even seen this, never mind that we've forgotten what it's like, we've never even seen such unbelievable luxury. In other words, as the Ran says, Hayatoma, the bottom Ran, in Dibro Maskel, Avosenu, Amru, so the Ran says, Hayatoma, Al Shahu or Al Shahoya, Kol Kach Bimide Tanuk, that somebody could be so invested in 1,000 ways to cook this, that that's what he's bringing to the Torah, that he only taught him 800. He says, I can't believe anybody could be so much involved in Gashmias. But now we'll conclude today's show with one last story, which almost seems to fly in the face of this, that Rebbe made an unbelievably large wedding. And there's a lot of deeper understanding of this story, but we'll just learn it on a more superficial basis right now, but a fascinating story. Rebbe Ovid Lehilula, Rebbe made a wedding. Hilula is normally a wedding. Rebbe Shimon Berei. We have the gears of Berebi, but it means Rebbe Shimon, who is his son. So he made a great wedding for Rebbe Shimon, his son. Now, Rebbe was fantastically wealthy, and Kosab Albez Genona, Estrid Vyarbon, Alfin Riboin Dinrin, Nofku Albez Genona Dain. And it was written on the wedding canopy, on the wedding hall the Rebbe had made, a guzma, that there was 240 million dinarim was spent on making this wedding. Now, riboy means tens of thousands, so arbon, esrin v'arba, 24 alfin riboyin. So that's 240 million dinarim was spent on this wedding. That's a huge sum of money. Many understand this as it wasn't literally talking about money. The Ben Yehuda goes into a lot of Kabbalah ideas here in saying that this was Shem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and all sorts of deep insights. Bottom line is, it was a large wedding. That's certainly fair to say. It was a very big wedding. But v'lo azmenei lebar kapara, Rebbe didn't invite bar kapara. Now, bar kapara is a bar plukta of Rebbe throughout Shas. He is a colleague, a chaver, a talmud chaver of Rebbe throughout Shas. There are constantly machlokes between Rebbe and bar kapara. Some suggest that he just forgot to invite him, but others give no specific reason. The Mefarish says over here, why didn't he invite him? V'lo azmenei lebar kapara, lefi shahaya ish badchan. Bar kapara, one of his major purposes in life was to try to make Rebbe happy. And in the Sefer Shvus Yaakov, as you can see over here in the Gilyan Hashas, he says, go look over there. Ayin bezeh dover nechmod b'tshuva Shvus Yaakov. And I'll read you parts of that tshuva in a moment. So the purpose of Bar Kapara was to make Rebbe smile a little bit. Rebbe had a very difficult life, even though he was very wealthy, but he was suffering for all of Klai Yisrael. He had 14 years of extreme difficult gastrointestinal illness to atone for the sins of Klai Yisrael. So Bar Kapara used to try to make Rebbe's life a little bit happier, and he was a batchan. He was constantly making jokes, and therefore Rebbe didn't want to be in a lighthearted mood because he felt that he was suffering for all of Klai Yisrael, and therefore if he became in a lighthearted mood, it would hurt Klai Yisrael. And he was afraid that Bar Kapara, if he invited him, would make him laugh. And that's exactly what happened. So, lo azmini le Bar Kapara. He didn't invite Bar Kapara. And Amalei, so Bar Kapara said to Rebbe, im li ovrei ritzonach kach, if people who go against HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, in other words, a simple understanding is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a tremendous amount of wealth, you make this big wedding, and you didn't invite me. In other words, you're not doing things correctly. So imagine that, lo se ritzono, the people that do your will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Allah has come v'kama, they will be rewarded. Now, this seems to be an insult to Rebbe, but the Shvus Yaakov explains that this is, obviously, this story can't be taken literally. I'll read you from the Shvus Yaakov, just parts of it. It's a beautiful tshuva. And he writes as follows. He says, Toma, ech b'shvil shlo asenei yiganu kulei hai. How could Bar Kapara, was a huge tzaddik, so to say, denigrate Rebbe for not inviting him and saying that if people like you who don't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu are given such wealth, imagine how much wealth would be for people to come. And he brings down that this is like the famous story that occurred with Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lezman, Rabbi Zaziah, and Rabbi Yeshua, when they were walking in the Harabayas after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that they all cried and Rabbi Akiva laughed. And this is based upon a machlokes, are you allowed to have simcha shel mitzvah after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed? After the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the simcha that we should have is always diminished. But are you allowed to have simcha shel mitzvah? So Rabbi Akiva's shita was that, yes, you can have simcha shel mitzvah. And the opinion of these others was, no, that you can have simcha shel mitzvah. And that's what this machlokas, he says, is between Bar Kapara and Rebbe. That Bar Kapara held over here that you are allowed to have simcha shel mitzvah, and you should be happy at the wedding. And Rebbe's opinion was, no, we still have to remember the Churban. In any event, so Rebbe apologized to Bar Kapara for not inviting him in Azmi. He went and invited him. So Omer, Bar Kapara now changes his tune and he says, Lo se ritzono b'olam hazeh kach, if you're rewarded in this world and you're such a great tzaddik, imagine how much reward you get, l'olam haba, Allah has come v'kama, how much you get in the world to come. In any event, the Gemara continues with the story. Yoma de mechayach bei Rebbe, on any day that Rebbe would laugh, asya purinasa liyoma. That was a bad day for the world, and all sorts of bad things would happen in the world because Rebbe, so to say, being happy, so now the world needed to be punished because of all the sins which Rebbe had taken upon himself. So, in any event, amalei lebar kapara, so Rebbe told Bar Kapara, lo se bad chinon, please don't make me laugh. And if you don't make me laugh, I will give you a large amount of wheat, 40 measures of wheat. Griv is like a measure. So please don't make me laugh. So what does Bar Kapara do? Amalei, Bar Kapara says to Rebbe, let the master see. They call griva de boina shakilna. That anything that I want to take over here, I will go and take. And what did he do? He's making a joke over here. So the Mefarish says that he was saying be'ez midosh eretz ekach. I will take whatever I want. In other words, shakal dikula rabba. He took a big basket. Dikula rabba, the Ran says, is sal gadol and chafye kufra. He coated it with tar. The Ran explains tochoso bezefes kidei shelo yetsu achitim mitoch nikve hasal. So the wicker basket, the holes in it, none of the grain would fall out. And the sach ve'areshit. Then he overturned it on his head. In other words, it wasn't in the position where you could put stuff into it. It was upside down, and you couldn't put anything into it. So he came to collect the grain, but he came to collect it in a way that you couldn't collect anything in it, which was funny. The Azal the Amalei said to Rebbe, lechuli mar arbon grivei chite derashina boch. So now I came to collect the 40 measures of wheat that you said you would give me. But obviously he couldn't collect it because the basket was overturned. So Achuk Rebbe, so Rebbe laughed at this. And Amalei, so Rebbe said to him, now you lost it. Lavazar toch, delo, tibatchon. Didn't I tell you that you wouldn't get the grain if you made me laugh? I'll give you the grain if you don't make me laugh. And now you made me laugh, so you lost the grain. That's what Bar Kappara tells him. Amalei, chite dorashina konesivna. I'm taking exactly what I deserve. In other words, that's why I overturned the basket, because I'm not entitled to any grain, because I made you laugh. And again, as I said, there's a lot of deep meaning over here, the difference of machlokas over here between Bar Kappara and Rebbe, how we should approach things in this world after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. You can see more about this in this tshuva from the Shavuos Yaakov. With this, we conclude today's share.